The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAA Hour on a Monday. It's myself and Conan here in studio. Well, Conan, how's it going?
Take number four here, Willie. It's taking you a long time to get back into it.
It's not easy. It's not easy. My brain has been fried. I forgot the code of the door getting up to the studio.
I changed it so you wouldn't get in. I'm taking that presenter's chair.
So what's the story here? So Paul Mannion, Dublin footballer, is on the show last Thursday. The minute I turn my back, you get a dub on. And I want to know what happened to the Sheppinator. How did he not pull the plug on this?
Well, he's blocked me, I think, from his phone, so I couldn't get through to him anyway. Not that I would have ran it by him, but I just rang and said, listen, I agree with you, Willie's a bit of an asshole, so do you want to bring on Paul Mannion and I'll chat to him myself?
Jesus.
And there you go.
So this is fair. See, maybe the mistake I make is that I don't want it to be awkward, so I actually say Kieran Kilkenny or whoever it is, or whoever the PR crowd is, yeah, you might just ask Kieran to run it, make sure that it's okay, because I don't want to land down there and it's all awkward. And then obviously I get the word back, no. So maybe my new thing should be I should just land down.
These boys just want a fair trial. They wanted a proper judge. They wanted somebody better to ask them a question, and they got it.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, I'm not even going down the road on this one. Anyway, so there's been some kind of news on the Mayo management's job. So Mike Solan has pulled out. So it looks like it's James Horan to get it. I don't know whether you've been covering a bit of this. I took a complete break from GAA last week and didn't bother with it at all. But, like, I mean, he had Billy Sheehan, obviously, on his ticket, and he was with the under-20s, under-21s, so he's gone. So he obviously got enough feedback to know that he's pissing against the wind, basically. James Horan is the people's champion in Mayo, and it looks like he's a complete shoe-in for that job now.
Well, I have a theory on this one. Do you want to hear it?
Go on.
James Horan contacted him and said, listen, Mike,
do you want to come on my ticket?
You're not going to get it. You know, it's a valiant fight and stuff, but you're not going to get it this time around. Come on my ticket. Help bleed through the under-21s and under-20s that you've been working with over the last few years, which there's a lot of them, and there's more coming through. Get initiated with the senior players who probably don't know you as a coach as much.
Yeah.
And then 2 years' time when I'm stepping aside and you can be ready.
You see, I know James Horan as a massive competitor, and I'd say he'd be like, that Mike Sola wants to go against me. Yeah. You really think he's going to go up against me? He's not. So Solan wished Mayo all the best in 2019 and beyond. So it sounded from that maybe James Horan hasn't. If I was going for a managerial job and some whippersnapper comes up trying to challenge me, I wouldn't be giving him, putting the arm around him. Anyways, the story in Kerry is Maurice Fitzgerald. Looks like he is going to get that job. And for my information is that the county board are telling him, Donny Buckley's on your ticket, whether you like it or not. Not that Maurice Fitzgerald would really kind of have any problem with Donny Buckley being on it. And Stephen Stack, who obviously won an All-Ireland with Kerry as a player and was over Austin Stacks when they won the Munster Club. So he's on that ticket. So that's actually looking like a strong management team as well.
That's an exciting lineup, and Maurice Fitzgerald just adds a bit more glamour to it now, doesn't it? It's like Zidane coming and taking over Real Madrid, and just all the boys are back. I think it'd be great now. The unfortunate thing for Maurice Fitzgerald is to come up against Jim Gavin and Dublin, you know, and that's ultimately what he's going to be tested on. Like, so he's getting thrown right into a baptism of lava, basically, like, you know. And if he can get these boys up to standard, great, but it's not like he's just going to be able to come in.
I think he's got a year or two grace, especially after Kerry losing to Galway and drawing with Monaghan, so any improvement on that will be okay for Morris in his first year. I don't think he'd be tested against Dublin yet, you know, depending on the age we know the age profile of the team is going to be very young, so I think he'd probably get the 3 years before, if he's in the third year and he's not, you know, making an impact against Dublin, he'll be starting to get a few letters, basically. That's all we'll say. Imagine Maurice Fitzgerald getting letters. Well, how sad would that be?
Christ. That's one thing that Fitzmaurice did allude to, wasn't it? That him leaving gives the next fella a chance to sort of
bend in time, that he wouldn't have got. So Tom Parsons was talking at, I think it was the GPA, had a their AGM down in Portlaoise, and they all went to Kieran Lillis's bar for dinner. Didn't come up near my restaurant, but I won't complain about that. Anyways, you know, what would the GPA have a problem with me about? Anyways, it's not like I've ever criticised them.
You have a few times there, in fairness.
I'm joking. I criticise them.
Challenged them.
Criticised them all the times. But anyways, Tom Parsons was talking about his knee. So it's crazy what this lad has had. So he's part of his hamstring and his quads in his knee. And he has an Achilles. What's a cadaver's Achilles? I didn't know what cadaver was, but it's a dead person,
yeah,
basically.
A dead person's Achilles in his knee.
So he's got a dead person's Achilles, he's got his own hamstrings, and he's got his own quads in his knee. This lad's gone. Forget about it. What? And then in the next sentence he says, I'm hoping to be all right for next year's championship. Tom, I think you might struggle.
I thought this was a feel good story. This is what the GA is all about, sort of thing. And you're coming out saying he's gone.
Well, he's actually saying that he asked the surgeon to make sure it's a high quality cadaver ligament, because yeah, he's requested one of the highest jumpers in the NBA. So like, yeah. I mean, but still, Jesus, he's got a part of an Achilles, part of a hamstring, a part of a quad in his knee. That doesn't sound to me like you're really, like, I'm saying, Tom, if you're walking around, you should be happy here, mate. So yeah. I'm not a medical professional.
It says Jan de Villiers reached out to him, the former South African legend, and sent him a letter and said he'd been through something similar at the age of 34 and came back for a World Cup. So,
right,
you know, it has been done before. Obviously that was professional setup that he was being looked after, but jeez, I don't know. I saw him in that picture of the new Mayo jersey, and he looked all right to me. He looks like still a specimen.
So he did the anterior and posterior cruciate knee ligaments, which is, you know, like, it's not very common to do both of them. So I think one is worse than the other. I can't exactly remember. One is less recovery time, but to do both just completely, it's unbelievable. And look, I'm joking, obviously. So he obviously knows what he's talking about. And if you see him back in the championship next year with a patched up knee like that, more power to him. Another thing I wanted to just quickly mention, and this isn't new news, but it kind of wound me up last week when I came across this. And this was Turlough O'Brien talking about Tier 1 and Tier 2. This actually could have been the week before I left and I just didn't notice it. But John Horan's obviously talking about Tier 2 All-Ireland competition. That's all great. My problem with the Tier 2 competitions is just that's what it's going to be. There's no holistic view of the whole year. There's no kind of let's restructure everything and have it all. This is just patchwork now to please another little bit. We'll still have all the issues that we had this year with the whole running of the year. Anyways, so Turlough O'Brien keeps talking about this, and this is why I wanted to mention it, is like, the B Championship will never attract sufficient attention. No appetite in the media to cover secondary competitions. As a result, players will not be interested in paying for a county. Top tier will hoover up all the publicity and attention. Out of sight, out of mind. Now, when I came up playing with Laois were were not top team. They were, I think we could have been in Division 3 for a year or two when I started out. There was never any mention in our dressing room about media attention. I never played with Laois for media attention. And like, I mean, I would have done plenty of interviews. I got a lot of media attention at times. But to think that a panel of inter-county players are worried about media attention, is this a thing? Because if that's a thing, where are you going with your squad, mate? Like, the whole idea of GEA is that you're proud to play for your county. I don't give a shit. I'm lining out for my county and I might win something with my county. Isn't that brilliant? And then you enjoy the win and you go in, celebrate it with your friends and you bond together. That's what playing inter-county is about. It's not, did you get a write-up in the paper about it? That's bullshit. Players might mention that amongst each other if there's a bit on the paper. They might buy it and read it. But that's not your motivation. That's just a nice little thing that comes with winning something. He's talking about media attention maybe for the first round of a championship match. Players don't care about that.
Yeah, I agree with you in that point. I think maybe the wider issue, and I hope that's what he's trying to get at, is, you know, the rich get richer in the weak. Get weaker.
They'll fall away. Well, poorer. If that doesn't sound to me like that's what he's talking about. This seems like publicity, media coverage, that this is a complete media issue he has. Like, I mean, I think that's wrong. I do take the point. But the very obvious thing, and it's in any championship restructure that I've done, is Division 1 would be at one weekend, Division 2 would be another weekend. Yeah. So they're on alternate weekends. So there's no choice but for it to get some sort of prestige and like it's the only show in town that weekend. That would be the fair way of doing it. But I don't. Players don't care.
Yeah.
Unless the world is changing, and it is changing, Conan, and I'm 40 now. Maybe they are motivated.
These young boys,
maybe they are motivated by how much they get. Or maybe there's headlines on Twitter or on like Sports Joe or wherever it is. Maybe. Mm. Are they? Would they be? Because this is just so alien to me that this would be a motivation for him to oppose a tier two. If this is, seems to be more important than actually winning something at your level. I don't get it. Publicity. Who cares? We've just had a brilliant win. We've won an All-Ireland B title. And he cares about whether there's going to be publicity.
I'm still going to give him the benefit of the doubt and, you know, reckon that he's suggesting that if they're not getting coverage, then people won't care as much. Then they're staying. It's easier for them to stay down in the second tier then because there's not as much momentum. He's looking at Carlo's example, where there is momentum behind the whole thing now. They're getting a national spotlight. People want to play for Carlo.
But they're getting in a national spotlight because they're starting to win a few games. And who did they beat? Teams at their own level.
Well, yeah, you'd say Kildare now and Louth. And,
well, this year, yeah. Up until that, it had been Kildare was Louth would be similar enough level. They're both Division 3 next year. Kildare was obviously their big win. But, like, I mean, Carlo, through beating the Division 4 teams and getting promoted, got plenty of coverage out of that, did they not? It was Carlo rising, and they did a lot of their own work of creating that and creating Carlo being a thing. And Turlough O'Brien deserves credit for it. But it just goes to show Turlough O'Brien's motivation here. He wants media coverage. Like, does he?
You after him and Poacher now, is it?
No, I like Turlough O'Brien. It just, he keeps going on about this, and I just had to kind of address it.
I do think, I still think, we've talked before about, you know, Division 3 and 4, and like, even if they're on a Saturday, they still don't get the same razzmatazz around them, and people don't care as much.
That's because they're nowhere near good enough. Like, I mean, this is nonsense as well. They'll never get the same media coverage because it's a much lower level.
And I'm not saying that this is why they should be getting more coverage. I'm just saying this is his worry, that if you just cut them off like they are in the league, then nobody's going to give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas them winning the championship, they're winning those Division 4 games, but they're getting further in the championship. They compete against Dublin. They go to play Monaghan because they've won 3 games in a row. You know, they're still in the main championship and their story's still going.
Yeah.
I think that's the sort of point, but
maybe. Yeah. But if they were played on turns the weekends, there would obviously be no issue because they would have to be reported on. There is that issue of the second tiers on at the same weekend. Like, let's be honest, we probably wouldn't cover the second tier at all on this. You only have an hour, you wouldn't have enough time. But, like, I mean, that's still the way of the world. Like, the fourth division doesn't get any coverage because you have to earn the right to maybe be in the league to earn coverage. I don't know. I'd still prefer, if I was a Leash player in Division 3, a chance of winning Division 2 All-Ireland than getting a write-up after losing to Dublin. Like, I mean, think about it. Like, this is their big kind of claim that they did well against Dublin and there was a lot of people at the match. Care less about a lot of people at the match. I challenged them as to whether, you know, beating teams in the championship and not having any kind of talk about it. Which dressing room did you prefer to be in after it?
Yeah, well, but if you were Leash, say, Division 3 and getting, like, you know, competing in the Division 2 All-Ireland but not winning it, and then feeling like you're getting more and more cut off from Division 1, never getting that big day against Dublin.
Yeah, sure, that's it.
But that's going to have an effect in 10 years' time.
Then you should count your lucky stars that you're not getting destroyed by Dublin if you can't even compete for Division 2. You want to be lucky that you can't get in there. Anyways, I've probably given that a little bit too much time. I want to do a bit of a club roundup here, Conan, because, like, I mean, this is a great time in the GAA calendar. It's absolutely fantastic. There's lovely little stories coming out. First one I'm starting with isn't a lovely little story, and I was trying to find out some more information about this morning. Is my old club Parnells accepted the relegation from division from senior football. So they conceded a relegation playoff, which was scheduled for Sunday. So there was a relegation doubleheader where Parnells played Lucan and Clontarf played Oliver Plunkett's, which I'm surprised Oliver Plunkett's are in the mix there. Paul Curran, their manager, and they've some good players. Clontarf obviously ran a county semi-final only a couple of years ago. So I say they were surprised, but they all got a nice little surprise when Parnells just pulled out. So obviously Parnells just immediately accepted a relegation. And I was texting one of my ex-teammates last night, and he says, look, it's very complicated. And he says, give me a ring today. And I didn't get a chance to talk to him this morning. So it's definitely an interesting one. It always is, seem to be some sort of complications with Parnells, because there is a lot of politics and infighting often within that club, and there's often people pulling in different directions, and it's not an ideal thing. I think all the transfers that they made back in the day split the club badly. When I joined first, I think me and Darren Rooney were the first two intercounty transfers, and we were welcomed with open arms. And then you're getting into year three and year four, and these transfers are still coming. And then the welcome kind of faded a little bit, even though I was gone at that stage. But I could probably see, obviously, the idea of getting all these transfers in is they were doing a big push in the local schools with games development officers that they were paying for themselves. And they would have a senior football team that could compete in Dublin Championship to try and inspire the children. This is where we are. This is how good we are. So, like, I mean, there is a lot of merit to their idea. But my own take on it is that they went to town on the transfers, and there was no need to go that many. And I don't think, like, the club hasn't recovered from that whole era.
Yeah. Was there any year there that you thought you were going to compete for the club?
We drew, just with me and Darren Rooney, as the intercounty transfers, we drew at Ballymun-Kickhams in the championship in my first year, and they beat us in a replay, but only like 3 or 4 points.
So there was a decent team there already.
And we'd been promoted out of Division 2, so there's a lot of good local lads now, some commitment issues, but that's the same with every county. That's the same with every club. And then the following year, Colin Begley transferred and MJ Tierney. Then suddenly you're with 4 Laois lads, and it started to turn into a bit of a, you know, I wasn't comfortable. Even MJ and Colin were two of my good friends. I still wasn't comfortable with it. I was like, Jesus, how many of the same county did I want? Then there was more coming along, coming along. It was like, holy shit. But
you've built a wall in Parnells now to keep the Laois people out.
It definitely caused a split in the club, and I might try and find out some more information on that, because that's sad to see that they didn't even show up to fight for their Division 1 status.
It's a really weird one. Like, I know, like, they didn't have a good championship. It was at 48 points they lost their 3 games by cumulative total, and like, I know that's 3 hidings, but they're in Senior B now next year, and they're going to try and win it to get back into Senior A. Like, you know, what's
just try and stay in it. Yeah, maybe they couldn't field the team. We don't really know. We're not too sure. But the other big news in Dublin, obviously, is Ballymun-Kickhams are out. So this seems to be a kind of yearly issue where the star-studded Ballymun team flatter to deceive and get knocked out of the championship or get to the final and can't win it. So they've only won one county title with this brilliant team that, let's be honest, is the backbone of the best Dublin team of all time. So you've obviously got the 4 starters, and you've got Paddy Small then, Evan Comerford. Evan Comerford would be on most county teams. Paddy Small, looking from the highlights, was running amok in the first half, looked like a really good player. So, like, I mean, this is it. Again, is it a huge shock? Because we're going to talk to Niall Coakley, who scored 1-4 in that game in part 2. So I'm not even sure if it's a shock anymore. Like, I mean, it's 2013, like I said. They won Leinster that year, beaten in the All-Ireland final after going about 8 or 9 points up, threw that away, and they've never recovered from that All-Ireland loss. And like, I can kind of relate to losing an All-Ireland club in heartbreaking circumstances by a point and never getting back to that stage, even though it was a really good team there in Port Laois when I was there. So, like, I mean, don't want to be too critical of Ballymun, but not sure what they need to try and become a little bit more like Vincent's, where they can grind out these matches that are kind of falling away.
Because it sort of looked like they were going to do that originally. Like, Jude's got obviously a good start, and then Ballymun's got the goal through Dean Rock's penalty, and then Jude's came back, and then Ballymun just pushed ahead. They just seemed to be like in control and pushing ahead, but they never got more than 3 points ahead, really. And then that just left it open for your man. It was Chris Guckian that got that goal, like a cracker goal into the top right corner.
Yeah, you think he meant it anyways. I think he did.
Yeah, the way his body shape was going, like, and there were 3 points down at the time. Suddenly it was a level game out of nowhere. Like, they were comfortable, but they're never more than 3 ahead, so that just kept it up in the air for them the whole time.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. So that's a weird one. So the semi-final is Jude's versus Vincent's, and it's Kilmacud Crokes against Ballyboden. So that's a local derby, and they played earlier on the championship, and we won that one. I think it was on the telly we were talking about the next day.
It was Ballyboden.
I think Ballyboden won it. No, Kilmacud Crokes won it. You just guessed there.
I just guessed. That is one point to make though about Plunkett's, is that they were in that group, the group of death of Raheny as well. So that's why they ended up in that playoff.
Ah, okay. Okay, right. Okay, so we'll go easy on them. You see, you're my Dublin football correspondent here. You shouldn't be looking back at me to tell you
who won it.
So a big shock in Mead. Right, so Simonstown Gaels, wait till you hear this. So there must have been a really strong wind here. So they're defending champions. They won 2 in a row and actually did well, almost beat Roane in the Leinster club. They went in 7-3 up against Dunboyne after playing with the wind. What was the score in the second half? 2-13 to a point they were beaten. So they were beaten 2-16 to 8 points. This is a team that's won 2 in a row and going for 3 in a row. I'm fairly sure on that. And Dunboyne just destroying them. So Donal Lenehan, who we all know from playing for Meath, and a fella called Robert McCarthy, who I don't know much about, he scored 1-4. Lenihan scored 7. So that's a huge shock in Meath. But this is why I love club season, because it just throws up these little stories and little results that are, you know, they're funny to read. They're funny to read. Maybe it's just interesting that would never happen in Leash, and I just think, Jesus, isn't that unbelievable? Yeah. Like, I mean, another one was Mark O'Connor, who's with Geelong, Zach Toohey's club. He lined out for Dingle at the weekend. Dingle beat Austin Stack, so he played as a sweeper in front of Kieran Donaghy. So he's obviously natural midfielder when he was minor, under 21. He's only 21. He lasted 45 minutes. He got a black card for I think he hit a fella a box, so he that not a bad black card. It was an off the ball foul anyway, and it led to a massive brawl where Kieran Donaghy came out and took exception to Mark O'Connor. So again, lovely little story of the young Aussie Rules fella coming back and the standing in front of the big legend and the big legend getting pissed off and coming out and starting a row with him. So there you have it in Kerry. And I was watching the Dr. Crokes Legion match yesterday, and geez, Dr. Crokes plays some great football. Oh my God, they'll win if they don't win the All-Ireland Club this year. I don't know. Gooch on the bench. We'll talk in performance the weekend about my man Tony Brosnan.
Tony Brosnan is coming good.
Listen, it's all about Tony Brosnan. He's a great player.
Lee Brennan can step aside. It's Tony Brosnan's
it's
year.
All about, this is the year of the Brosnan. This is the year of Tony Brosnan. So Gooch came off the bench and asked some of the football Dr. Crokes play. It's just out of the very top drawer. They're just pure naturals, and loads of talent on their bench as well. So, we'll talk about Tony Brosnan in a little while. Tyrone Championship, Killyclocher beat last year's champions Oma by 6 points, so it's 112-9. Killyclocher, obviously very, very strong team. They won it a couple of times in recent years. And I saw an interesting tweet from Cathair O'Kane, and he said, "The champions in Tyrone are gone. No team has retained the title since Carrickmore in 2005, and only one has even made it back to the final." Is there a more competitive? Is there a more filthy? Maybe. Well, you don't want to say it's filthy, but like, I mean, Tyrone club football is fairly low scoring usually, and they're dogfights basically, and no county champion has made it back to the final in the last 13 years. That's an incredible stat, and different teams winning it.
Eight different teams winning it in the last 13 years.
Eight.
It's unbelievable. And
the
crowds
must be huge then, are they? Because like, it doesn't get any better than that, really.
This is the thing that would piss a lot of Derry people off, you know, where like the national sort of narrative would be, the club championship's too competitive in Derry, and you just look over the wall and the one in Tyrone's even more competitive. Yeah. It's better, and their team is very good as well. The county team off the back of it. But I look at someone like, there's eight winners, but someone like a team like Ardbeau, you know, Brian McGuigan's club, and they haven't won it since 98. They've been in one final in 2010.
They're in the semis,
yeah. And that's a class club, like a class team, and they haven't been able to win it in all this time. You know, it sort of shows how, like, just how competitive it is.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, we talk about people not getting to the final. Both of last year's finalists put out in the quarterfinals there at the weekend, Eric O'Kieran and Oma. You know, both of them gone, and now completely new teams in the semi-final.
Yeah.
Like, this is terrible.
I know, that's brilliant. That's incredible. And it's in stark contrast to the Leash Championship, because Port Leash hammered St. Joseph's, who would be a strong enough team, like, relatively, you know, compared to all the other teams in Leash, but not Port Leash. So they hammered them 4-15-1-9. Only kind of downside for Port Leash was Brian McCormack was sent off, but I think on video evidence he's going to get off it, because you know when you win a free and you're trying to push your man out of the way so you can take it. So he was accused of striking, right, when he said he pushed him away. I've played and watched Bruno play since he made his senior debut in 1999. I've never once seen him hit a fella a box or be in any way dirty. So he's 38 now, 39, and to be banned for a county final would be just lousy. It was Maurice Deegan reffing the game.
Yeah.
So I think it was the linesman that kind of stitched him up. So they have video evidence of it. So surely the Leash County Board will do the right thing, because, you know, he might be 38, but he's still Port Leash's most important forward.
Yeah.
Unbelievably, because Port Leash are such a strong team. It's all about him. A lot of the time, any of the games I watch. But they play O'Dempsey's in the final. So O'Dempsey's are making their first final in a long, long time. So I was just looking there this morning. So O'Dempsey's, since Port Leash won 9 in a row, then were beaten by Stradbally, then won it last year, and will probably win it this year. So of those 12 finals, Portlaoise have beaten 8 different clubs in the final, or will O'Dempsey's will be the 8th different club. So it's not like Portlaoise even have a rivalry going. It's like do you know what it's like? It's like the Leinster Championship with Dublin in it. So all the other clubs are on the same level, so they're all able to get to a final, have a great year. Portlaoise destroyed them. Sometimes even Emo Portlaoise beat in 2015. Emo went back down, relegated. Do you know what I mean? Ballylinan got to the final last year, back down. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not good. So they're all able to come out of nowhere, have a great year, get to a final. But none of them are able to step up and be in any way rivals of Portlaoise. And I've always said it from Portlaoise's point of view that the sooner some of them start joining up and actually having a proper Leash Championship, because this is ridiculous. Maybe even do it like Kerry do it and have the intermediate clubs join together and have, you know, East, South, North and West Leash kind of with the intermediate clubs. That looks like a good idea in Kerry. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's something like that has to happen, because there's no kind of excitement about the Leash Championship. Leash were 2-9 to 2 points up at half time. This is against Joseph's, a traditional, like when I would have come up playing underage or playing senior, Joseph's and us would have had some great county finals. Do you know? But like, I mean, they're all gone back so far.
Like, they haven't won the Leinster title in a while then, haven't they?
2009 was the last Leinster.
And this
title.
Is such a dominant team and a good team.
To keep getting beat by the Dublin champions. Like, and last year was the big mess up for Portlaoise, in that Dublin champions were beaten by Rathnew on the same day. Portlaoise throw away a 3-point lead with 2 minutes to go against Moorfield, and Moorfield win it. So Portlaoise are sick, and we're absolutely sick. Yeah. Sick myself walking out of that. Because that was the big chance.
Yeah, and I tell you, Vincents don't look like they're slowing up this year. Like, it's going to take something special to catch them. And I'd assume they're going to win the Dublin Championship, and then something to catch them in the Leinster. I'd be very surprised.
The great thing about Vincents is that they've no Dublin players. But they don't. Like, which is unbelievable that they've such unbelievably good Dublin players and ex-Dublin players, that you look at Ballymunkickhams have 6 lads gone all year. So they're never involved with the team. They're coming back with like strangers.
Yeah.
They're probably coming back in then trying to dictate, well, the intensity is not high enough tonight. Now, I don't want to be disrespectful to anyone, but you're coming from a very high level of football and preparation back to your club, and maybe you feel that it's your duty to tell them this. And maybe that pisses your teammates off. I don't know the dynamic of Ballymun at all, but I can imagine through playing with Portlaoise, when we would have had a lot of county lads, I know exactly the difficulties they face. And Vincent's don't have any of that. So they only had Connolly, and he's just been, you know, brought back in off the bench, reintroduced into the team. But they've nobody else, you know? So, like, I mean, they're just a proper, brilliant club team.
Yeah. It is amazing, though, when you look through to 15 and it's all names that you know, and, like, a lot of them from over the country as well. Like, and they're all there all year, which is frightening.
Well, yeah, but they've the likes of Brendan Egan, who were knocked out by Sligo well early in the year. So he's back in the, you know what I mean? It's not, even the other fellas they have are not, like, going long distances into the championship where they're missing
them. Yeah, Jamie Connolly, I suppose, is still arguably one of Dublin's best players, and he's...
They did have Nathan Mullins, I suppose, with Donegal into the Super 8s this year, so maybe they had two or three there that they had to kind of do without. But anyways, Donegal, before we finish up this roundup, there's definitely Ballyhale Shamrocks. TJ Reid missed 3 penalties and scored 115. How about that? I'm going to mention him in performance of the weekend. So they beat Dixborough, who were last year's county champions, and Ronan Maher scored 2 goals in the last 10 minutes, and we're going to mention him performance of the weekend as well. The one was in the last minute to keep Turles Sarsfield's domination of Tipperary hurling on the goal. Like, it's gas, all these little stories, and they're always like Oisín Kelly, for example, scored. He's the Offaly hurler. He scores 2 goals for Ban in injury time to beat Clara and get to a county final. There's loads of little stories like this. It's happening all over the country. Yeah. And this is what really annoys me. All this should be done on a Sunday on a TV show with reporters all around these grounds, and like a Gillette Soccer Saturday. Why not? Why the potential for this club championships, even county championships, to kick off and become massive. Yeah. I think we'll get to the stage where the county is over and people won't care. So, oh, we're into the club now. This is going to be brilliant. And like, in fairness to TG4, like, I mean, they're the only ones at the moment. I'm not sure what happened to Air Sport. I need to find out that. Air Sport haven't been in the mix at all, and they showed a lot of club last year. So I need to find out what's actually after happening.
I do, because we thought that there was going to be an Air Sport game for the last group game, and I remember contacting them to ask which game was it going to be, but I didn't hear back on anything. I know they're going massive on rugby as well, so I don't know if that's interrupting it or not. But
yeah, It was a weird one because they'd really committed to doing the club last year and they were showing loads of games. But like, I mean, if Air Sport had those rights, just do that Gillette Soccer Sunday. Or hear me, soccer Gillette GA
Sunday.
Sunday. Or Guinness GA Sunday. But let's change it from whatever it is on Sky. But like, I mean, do you get me? The potential the potential is absolute. And then when it kicks into the provincial clubs, the stories that come out of that, of the rivalries from different counties playing each other and the history of these clubs, the stories that are going on, it's unbelievable. Yeah. And it's just ignored. It's ignored. And then you have everybody whinging, well, the GAA are stupid to lose out in September anyway, with promotional opportunities with the inter-county. It's like, shut up. Seriously, why don't you complain about the club that's the heartbeat of the whole association, the grassroots, and that's completely ignored?
Yeah.
And everybody seems to be okay with that.
And everybody can relate to it. As you say, those stories, the players are more open when they're with the club. They're free to talk. They're not worried about what they can and can't say. I don't know about you, but like the first thing I'm doing every Monday morning is refreshing the Dubs TV channel, like on YouTube, because I want to see the highlights, because I know there's these star-studded players playing. It's like the World Cup almost, like where these club players you've been watching every week now you go to their country and they're playing with a smaller country, a lot of them. This is sort of in reverse where you're going to your club, but you see these stars that are playing all around the country now and seeing how they can do with their club.
Yeah,
like there is a bit of magic in it.
Absolute magic. It's magic that's not being captured. There's not, and you're only following it through Twitter or, you know, through websites that are finding out different things. And like, I mean, this is just there. If you've got resources, and we talked to Declan McBennett recently, get this, put this on. Like, it's not there at the moment. So, like, I mean, it can't cost that much. How can it cost so much when nobody wants it here at the moment? Like, I mean, just get it on. Anyways, the last results that I thought caught my eye was Donegal. So Gweedore beat Railton Amara, a club I'd never heard of, if I'm being honest.
Bundoran?
So 8-13 to 3-12. It sounds like a ladies' football result. No offence to ladies. They do have some random kind of massive goals and less points kind of results. So that's an incredibly high scoring game for Donegal, which has a reputation for being dour and terrible. But then you get to the other one that I wanted to mention is Kilcare. County champions are out. They lost 196 points to Naomh Connell. That's Glenties. They're a dour club. No surprises to hear Jim McGuinness kicked off this their revolution. So not only did he kick off their revolution and inspire them to win county titles like he did with Donegal, he left that kind of legacy there that these are a dour team to watch, and they kept Kilcare to 6 points.
Without Ryan McHugh, it was obviously a big loss for Kilcare.
Yeah, and Paddy McBrearty as well, obviously. And Mark McHugh went off after 10 minutes.
Jesus.
So Kilcare, like, without those three, let's be honest, let's forget about it. So, like, I mean, I think they stayed in it right up to the last 10 minutes, and then Naomh Connell got a goal. So Kilcare are out, and that was last year's county final, Naomh Connell versus Kilcare. So Naomh Connell march on. Gweedore, who are very strong, march on as well.
Yeah, I want to focus on the 11 goal thriller, not the Dyer affair. Like there's a team who shipped 21 points and they won by 16 points. That's Donegal football for you, you know.
Yeah.
Like, did you see the Antrim score? You were away, the Antrim minor game, club minor game.
No.
During the week. Well, let me read it out. All Saints Ballymena 11-10, Tiernan O'Grandlestown 8-9.
Holy shit.
Yeah, Ulster football's on the up, will they? The rest of you catch up on us.
It's a goal fest. Just go for goals.
It's too much, to be honest.
Alright, up next we'll talk to Niall Coakley.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't. But
you didn't let Shamey talk at a Hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a Hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
There's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
No, absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
All right, Cork and St Jude's forward Niall Coakley joins us on the line now after St Jude's brilliant win over Ballymun on Saturday. How's it going, Niall?
Very good, yeah. So massive win for us there on Saturday. So just starting to, I suppose, get the head round to it now. But certainly great balls Saturday. Great to get the win. But as you saw yesterday, Drew Vincent's now, so it won't be long getting your focus on the next challenge.
No, you're definitely going to have to do it the hard way if you're going to do it this year with Ballymun and Vincent's on the menu.
Yeah, that's for sure. I suppose when you get to this stage of the championship, obviously, you know, Bowden had a big win over Nafina as well, and Crokes obviously have massive talent too. So there's no doubt about it. It certainly isn't a tough championship to win. But you know, we'll take massive confidence from Saturday, getting over Ballymun, and use that now going into Vincent's in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, so you got a goal after 2 minutes, and I saw the highlights. They're on YouTube there this morning. If anybody hasn't seen them,
yeah,
there's about 5 minutes, and it's I don't know much about your goals, but it was a typical Kevin McManaman assist, anyways.
I think it was one of the few times maybe in the whole game Kev managed to get in a one-on-one situation. And as you say, kind of typical Kev Mac fashion, just took your man around the outside. I played for me basically, I had a simple task just to palm it in. But as you said, typical Kev. But it was probably the one time we did manage to get him kind of isolated one-on-one and he done the rest, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I mean, it was kind of nip-tuck then for a while, and then Ballymun looked like they were in control of the game. They went 1-10 to 1-6 up after 55 minutes. Before that, they'd taken Philly McMahon off after 49 minutes and Jason Whelan off in and around the 55, 56 minutes. So, like, I mean, maybe Ballymun thought, OK, we're going to wind down the clock here and take off a couple of players, or what was going on there?
Yeah, well, I suppose I disagree that they were taking them off for, I don't know, that they thought the game was over, because, like, to be totally honest, I thought we played the better football throughout. I know in the first half we got the goal, missed a fair few chances. I think we had 6 or 7 misses in the first half, and they were just incredibly clinical up top. Dean Rock, I don't think he hit a wide all day. Paddy Small looked very dangerous at the start. They got the penalty, and we done very well to get, I think we kicked 3 in a row then after that. We responded very well and then went in a level at half time. I suppose in the second half then, they were just very clinical with their chances, where we actually were the opposite. We were creating chances, we had a couple of goal chances. I missed 3 frees myself. You know, we were very wasteful. So, like, in terms of how the game was going, I thought we were actually a better team, but they were just far more clinical. As I said, I don't think Dean Rock kicked wide all day, and just looking back even on the highlights, you could see he was just stroking them over.
Yeah.
Very clinical. But so I wouldn't think they were taking the lads off, kind of resting them up, to be totally honest with you, Woody. Obviously, you know, I don't know what their management was thinking, but to me, I wouldn't say that they thought they had the game won, especially the way the play was unfolding.
Okay, right. So it was a competitive. It was always competitive, but it was 1-3. Then you scored down in the last maybe 7-8 minutes to win it.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, I think who kicked the point? We got a point anyway. Bring it back to 3 points. And then Chris Cookie and went up the middle, and I don't know, was he going for a point or what, but he put it right into the top corner, and then that got us level, and they went up then actually and got a free. Dean Rock kicked them point ahead, we went up, got an equaliser, and then we won the kick out and got the winner. So I suppose it was a frantic last few minutes, to be totally honest with you. Up and down, and you know, it was just amazing to get the win in the end.
Yeah, so like, I mean, you've been really consistent the last 3 years. As Pádraig Monaghan took you over, you were beaten in 2016 in the semi-final. I'm sure you were very disappointed with that, to Castleknock. Then last year,
yeah,
you lost to St Vincent's. They got a lot of goals, 4-12 to 1-12, and now you're back in a semi-final again. So like, I mean, shouldn't really be a surprise to anybody at this stage that St Jude's are able to beat Ballymun Kickhams.
No, not at all, and it certainly wasn't a surprise to us. You know, we're an incredibly competitive team. I think that's the one thing we do have, which is that we are a team as such, and I suppose Ballymun have so much talent, and very hard, I suppose, for them to integrate such quality into a team kind of at short notice, whereas with us, we're incredibly, as I said, consistent. You know, we'd have like Kev Mack, obviously, and with the Dubs, but that's one player really just kind of coming back in, and it's very easy to fit Kev into your team. Whereas obviously, you know, the likes of Ballymun have 6 to come in, and they've obviously have to try and bed them in. But I suppose in terms of ourselves, as you said, 2016 was incredibly disappointing. We were actually, I suppose, in a similar enough situation, massive underdogs playing Crokes in the quarterfinal. And we managed to turn Crokes over, but then I remember we played Castleknock a week later and we just didn't go up at all, and Castleknock deservedly beat us on the night, and that's probably still one that really, really does hurt us looking back on it. last year then, you know, we were in the game for probably 40, 45 minutes against Vincent, and unfortunately they got the goals in the end to kind of put us to bed. But, you know, we definitely did take some confidence from that after knowing that we, you know, we can put it up to them. But it's, you know, their quality side as well, and I suppose they probably have the benefit, as what I mentioned earlier, and being a real team as well. I don't think they had anyone on the Dublin panel this year after the league, so they'd be very consistent as well, consistent team selections. You know, they're top of the Dublin league as well, so you know, they'd have the same benefits that we would have in that regard.
Yeah, no, they would. So how do you get that real club feel kind of in St. Jude's? Because you do have a lot of transfers. Like, I mean, you've Mark Sweeney from Antrim, Barry Fitzgerald from Cork, yeah. Killian O'Reilly from Cavan, Kieran Fitzgerald from Kildare, Pádraig Clark from Sligo. We've Billy Sheehan from Kerry and kind of half leash after a good few years. And you have yourself from Cork. So that's one thing I always remember when I was with Parnell's, the reputation that Jude's would have is that they're a really good together club team. But how do you get that going when, you know, you've a lot of new fellas coming and going?
Yeah, I suppose the first thing is that, you know, all of them, you know, you listed out a fair few names there, and there's actually probably a few more missing from the squad overall. But I suppose we've all kind of joined at different stages. So I don't think any year there's been four or five brand new players kind of catapulted in, if that makes sense. So like Mark's been around the Jude squad now for probably 6 years. Yeah. I think this is my fourth year, maybe, you know, arguably the first year didn't really count, but it's my fourth year around Jude's. And then say Billy's there now 3 years. So I think that's one thing, is that never have we had, you know, four or five lads joining straight away. But I suppose the second thing is that the Jude's lads are from Jude's and Temple Org or wherever, they're all so welcoming. You know, I think I mentioned it before, and that when I was there in 2014, I wasn't playing with them, but you know, they were so welcoming to me. I was one of the lads. They were taking interest in my home club, where I was from, what I was doing up here. And, you know, they make everyone feel involved. And then I suppose we have a great bond up there, in that, you know, we socialise together, maybe too much at times, but, you know, we're all great buds. And, like, you know, we go away every year. It's funny, the first weekend in December, it's booked out for the squad, because every year we go away on a trip. And there's a real close feel there. You know, as I said, I feel like one of the lads there now, and I'm sure the lads who only joined this year are the same. So I think it's a mixture, as I said, of lads not a whole host of new players coming in at the one time, and then the boys up in Jude's just being so welcoming to lads like myself who are up here for work or whatever.
Right, okay. And it, yeah, like I have to say, like these are all genuine transfers of fellas that move close. Is it true? Yeah. Is it true? Kieran Fitzgerald googled clubs in South Dublin before he found St Jude's.
Yeah, so he is a very funny one. So I believe he's teaching somewhere in the south side. I don't know the exact school, but I think he honestly was just looking to. I think he was getting married. He was looking to kind of just prioritise other things, I think, and popped to Google, emailed the club secretary, who's actually Pádraig's wife, Pádraig Monaghan's wife. So I'd say when Pádraig found out who he was in the long run and don't transfer forms. But yeah, that's a funny one, alright.
Yeah, so Kieran Fitzgerald's obviously played for Kildare a lot of times, so I'd say I just couldn't believe he's looked, this fella is actually approaching St Jude's, which is a classic.
It was absolutely mad, because generally, you know, you'd have some contact through work, or like, you know, myself, it was actually through John Dineen from Carrigline. He had relocated up here, and he was actually managing the St Jude's team in 2014 with Des Newton for Roscommon at the time. And I was just looking to train, and that's how I ended up here. So you generally kind of have some contact like that, whereas I think Fitzy literally just email saying, you know, have the gear and we'll travel. So when Pádraig found that out, I'd say he wasn't long driving down to him with the forms. But Fitzy's a great player. He came on board, I think, start of 2017. But like that again, like he integrates into the squad, you know, great pile of myself and all the lads, like, and he certainly is one of us. So it's a funny story there, right?
So you played for Carrigaline before you moved up to Jude's, and they're an intermediate club. So you went from intermediate football in Cork to senior football in Dublin. And like, I mean, like, it's obvious to most people, Dublin senior football at club level is of a hugely high standard. So like, I mean, that must have been a bit of a culture shock to go from that level up to the next level.
Yeah, it certainly was. As I mentioned there already, I was training with the boys in 2014, and I suppose, to be totally honest, the first few sessions I was with the lads, I was blown away by the physicality. Like, just, you know, even in a possession game, you were getting hit and you were feeling every hit. Whereas back in Cork intermediate level, it's a lot more kind of free flowing football, kick passing, very, you know, kind of, I suppose, more traditional football. That was the first thing that struck me in 2014, and it definitely took me a while to kind of get to the pitch of it. Funnily enough, I probably had my best year playing with my club at Carrigaline because of it, I think.
Right.
You know, just being in that environment up here, even though I was taxing the body with the car driving up and down at the weekend, but I think the training I was doing with the lads really benefited me. And also kind of the insight into maybe how they looked after themselves off the pitch as well. So I was struck by how many of them, you know, regularly went to the gym, and, you know, it's part of their, you know, it's part of their routine. Whereas back home, I think at the time, you know, we would have maybe went to the gym in pre-season two or three times a week, and then once the championship started or the leagues, or even, you know, you wouldn't really be focusing too much on the gym.
Yeah.
So I think seeing that up here gave me that kind of, I suppose, gave me that insight and what the level I needed to get to. So it's funny, actually, the first year I started playing with you in 2015, it was actually a nightmare year for myself personally. First league game, I still remember we were playing Plunkett's, and I don't know if you've played many times in Tymon North, the Jude's pitch, but not the best surface ever.
Not in the winter,
yeah. So it's actually been redeveloped, so hopefully next year now we'll have a beautiful one. But I went over my ankle, fractured my ankle 3 minutes into my league debut, and then was out for 3 or 4 months, and then got back playing later on in the summer, and then tore my medial. So basically it was more or less a write off of the year. I think I played 3 games in the whole year. But then the club at home, Carrigaline, managed to win the intermediate county for the first time ever.
Oh, Jesus.
So, like, look, I'm not going to lie, I was absolutely devastated, obviously selfishly, for selfish reasons. Like, my younger brother was on the panel there. I mean, my younger brother was playing for Carrigaline, and, you know, fellas like Nicholas Murphy, who's obviously a hero to me growing up, like, I was, and all the rest of the lads down there, I was so happy for the lads, obviously, and
yeah,
delighted that they were able to get that victory. But for myself, I did, you know, to be totally honest with you, know, I was in a dark enough place. That's it.
Well, I'll make you feel a bit better. The year I left Portlaoise to go to Parnell's, Portlaoise won the Leinster Bloody Club, won the Leinster Club. I nearly had a nervous breakdown.
Oh, God. No, Willie, I was the same. I swear to God, I can still remember being inside the pub in Temple Bar, the Keys, and I swear, like, I was in the worst form ever. And I remember one of the young lads, actually, Kieran Doherty from Jude's, he's 23 now, but at the time, you know, he would have been only about 19 or 20. I remember him coming up to me, he's like, "Are you all right, Coakley? Like, what's wrong with you?" And I was just like, you know, just thinking how I missed out on that. But obviously, as I said, that's selfish reasons, like, but I was delighted for the lads at home and my brother and everyone back home. But I think again, like, it probably made me more motivated then, coming back into 2016, and that's really kind of when I kicked on, to be totally honest with you.
Right.
Was 2016. 2015 was almost a write off of the year for me. But I think that it gave me that extra bit of motivation and kind of bit between the teeth to come back in 2016 a bit stronger, you know.
Yeah, and you definitely did. So, like I mentioned, you played intermediate, and by the way, your reaction to them winning the intermediate is perfectly natural. You'd be a liar if you didn't say you were livid.
I know,
but,
yeah.
Like, I mean, it's easy. Like, it is selfish, but being selfish, like, I mean, you play for your own reasons and stuff, and you don't want to miss out on anything. But anyways, so you played intermediate with Carrigaline, and then you went up playing senior football with St Jude's, and then you made your debut for Cork seniors at the age of 27. So you took up another level again, and you actually played the Munster final in 2017.
That's all. I think I kind of really focused on 2016, and I had a good start to the year up here with Jude's, and Billy Sheehan was called in to do a bit of coaching, and I think he was selected that year with Cork. Yeah. And he basically, it was funny, he rang me on St Patrick's Day asking was I heading back to Cork, because I think the way it was falling, we had a weekend there, and I said I was, and he said, "Look, we're actually having a B game or an internal game, would you come in and join us for the day?" And you know, I suppose I was a bit shocked at first, because you know, I never played for Cork before, and I was a bit shocked, so I was like, delighted to go in, obviously. And I suppose this was probably about March time, I think it was around Patrick's Day. And played well enough in an internal game, and then I got a call off Patter asking me to come back down the following week. So that was good. And then ended up going on a training camp in 2016 to Portugal. Played quite well out there. Called into the panel, and I suppose I was on the bench for three of the championship matches in 2016. I suppose at the time I felt I was playing well enough to maybe get a run, but in hindsight it would have been massive to put me in after not playing any kind of league or any underage with Cork. And yeah, I suppose it was probably a plus for me to get onto the championship squad. So then really they kind of did it, you know, I met management, Patter and Billy, and they said to me, like, you know, you're going to be getting your chance early in 2017, and it's up to you to kind of take it or not. So yeah, and then I suppose I started the year quite well in 2017, you know, through the McGrath Cup and even a couple early rounds of the league. Was happy enough with my form, and we had a shocking performance as a team that I remember against Clare in Cusack Park, and there was a few of us kind of dropped in, and didn't really see any action for the remainder of the league. So to be totally honest, I think my form kind of dropped and I lost a bit of confidence then, you know, when you're kind of four or five games and you're not really getting any run and you're not playing football and, you know, you're doubting yourself and obviously I was driving up and down from Dublin in as well, so you'd be tormenting yourself on the motorway, like questioning the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then I didn't actually make the squad for the Waterford game. I remember I wasn't in the 26, and to be totally honest, I probably wasn't maybe playing well enough to get on that 26. But then I can remember I had a couple of games with the club up here around that same time, because obviously wasn't involved, and I just, for whatever it was, I just got the confidence back and started being a bit more carefree about it, if that makes sense. I wasn't putting pressure on myself, and I was performing really well then in training. It was almost like a change in a week. I don't know how I went from, you know, I kind of started playing really well then again in training, and got back into the squad for a tip game. Was a bit disappointed I didn't get on in that game, but we won. That was the main thing, and then I suppose catapulted in from the start against Kerry for my championship debut. So that was kind of how it came about.
Yeah, geez, I say the nerves were at you. So you've had a very interesting career then. So then Ronan McCarthy takes over Cork this year and tells you you're not going to be part of his panel. So, like, I mean, this is a complete roller coaster ride. Like a debut at 27.
Yeah.
Then, like, another roller coaster, like you've just explained, between getting on and getting off, and then the next manager coming in saying, and this was even without a trial or without anything. McCarthy, what did he ring you, or how did he let you know?
Yeah. So actually, we were playing Coola in the quarter final of the county up here last year, and I got a phone call the night before, just basically saying, you know, we'll be meeting as a squad in the next couple of weeks, and it's bad news, and you know, you won't be involved, and That was pretty much it. So yeah, at the time, like, I knew he was ringing around because I could see lads leaving the WhatsApp group, and I suppose it's the way you know about everything these days, isn't it, through WhatsApp? But yeah, so I got to call. I suppose I was a bit disappointed, obviously, in hindsight. As you said, though, maybe I'm not too sure, you know, how much of me he would know about, if that makes sense, and that I wouldn't have been playing senior football in Cork. And as I mentioned, I was kind of in and out of the Cork team in 2017. So it was disappointing, totally honest. It took me a while to kind of maybe, I suppose, fully get over it, if that makes sense. But, you know, maybe it was the right decision in the end, I suppose, for myself. I did, you know, put a lot more into work, into spending more time with friends and family, and then obviously putting more into the club as well and being around with the lads all the time. But I suppose that's how that news came about. Very disappointing at the time, but you know, I suppose the call, that's the call, and you know, I think he is panel in mind, and that was kind of it.
Yeah, okay, so maybe he'll maybe send him a link to that YouTube video of the 1-4 against Ballymun against Ballymun, and you might get back.
We'll look maybe the YouTube clip, but if he saw the full game, he'd see the freeze I missed as well. So
Send the highlights. Send the highlights, and you'll be grand. So come here. So this is it. So you're Vincent's next, and I have to say, like, I'm going to start supporting St Jude's now that I know you're basically a culty club up in Dublin. So, like, I mean, I have to get in behind you. So it would be nice. You've never won. Jude's have never won a senior title. They've never won a hurling title, even though they've got close to that as well. So, like, I mean, suppose you'll be saying amongst yourselves, it's about time we take that next step and follow that win up with another big one.
Yeah, big time, because as you know, everyone was of cause, but we're kind of, I suppose, we're sick and no, like, don't want to just get an upset, you know, beat Ballymundall, well and good, but if we work the next day and lose to Vincent, you know, really, what good was it to us at the end of the day? So, you know, there's a massive craving, massive desire there from the squad, get that first county title. As you mentioned, I think the lads were in the final in I think it was 2009. Yeah, I think they were in the final. I mean, the hurlers were very unlucky, actually, beating extra time. I think it was 2015 or 2016 by Crokes, and then obviously you come up against the Coola team who are dominating at the moment. But yeah, football wise, like it's something where, as a squad, we are really trying to rectify. You know, having one last performance, but we need to back it up again. So. It'd be amazing for everyone involved. I think the club's 40 years old this year, so it's still a relatively new club. So we're still craving in that first county, but within the squad, it's definitely something that we're focused on. Vincent's, obviously, I think they're going for 3 in a row at the moment, so they're such a strong team. But, you know, we'll prepare as best we can in 2 weeks and go into it full of confidence, you know?
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, Niall, thanks very much for taking a call and best of luck in that semi final.
Well, very much.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning and I had the podcast on from Newbridge, Southern 8, and that helps the journey, to be honest, if I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs. Depends on mood, man. Ed's good for if you're in a sloppy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
Paddy Power Performance of the Weekend, Conan, and the first nomination is Niall Coakley. We just talked to him on the phone. He's a kind of an interesting career so far. Like, I mean, no underage with Cork. Never represented Cork until he was 27 at any level, and this was senior level. So went from intermediate club to senior club in Dublin, then up to senior, then gets a phone call that he's not there this year, so now he's the senior club with Dublin. So, like, I mean, he scored 1-4, 1-1 from play, and played really well. And St. Jude's, like, I mean, Coakley gets the nomination here, really, for, we can't give all of St. Jude's a pair of Paddy Power boxers or lucky pants, but, like, I mean, that was just a brilliant, brilliant win. And like I said to Niall, almost something that we shouldn't be shocked about, really, with St. Jude's anymore.
Yeah, to be honest, I was listening to that interview licking my lips thinking, geez, this could be me. It's like I'm just coming from the other side of the country, going from intermediate club, senior club, yeah, in Dublin, just waiting for the Derry call up now.
Think of it. Now, what he was lucky, which you need, is you need Billy Sheehan, obviously, is with St. Jude's and then got on the Cork coaching ticket, so he got him down. So you need somebody that's on the next Derry management team to get involved with Skerries.
And then yeah, because they wouldn't
recommend someone. Me, like, recommend, yeah, someone. You need someone to see you every day, and then you're, listen, you could be wing forward for Derry next year if you can.
Will you stop it? Late develop. I've been writing stories about myself. This is what the GAA is all about.
Another player, Tom Lahiff, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, who's number 5 for St. Jude's, and he scored 2 absolutely brilliant points from, yeah, play, and trying to find out who he is, and he's not one of, they have about 7 Culshies on the team, you know, St. Jude's, so they have a load of outside transfers, like Niall was saying, but Tom is one of their homegrown lads. He's about 23, he played a lot of soccer,
yeah,
but he looks like a really, really good player.
There's a guy, another guy, not to rain on Tom's parade, but Kieran Doherty, who played the first ball in for the goal.
Yeah,
it's on, like, outside the boot, over the top of the sweeper.
Beautiful ball, and he got the winning point.
Was it him who got,
yeah,
it as well?
And he's homegrown as well. He's a Dublin under 21, oh,
yeah,
as well. So, like, I mean, they have a mix of Culshies and young Dubs and Kevin McManaman.
Yes,
what more do you want?
Yes, like, all that culture there, just, well.
Yeah, because that's the thing, and this is why, like, they're able to get maybe this club culture, in that none of the Culshies that they signed are senior intercounty players. They were ex, or they're not on the panel. Well, Niall is back in the thing. So you've got these Culshie club players coming up looking for a new club. And do you know what I mean? They're able to harness that and make it gel together like a club. But again, how do you make a club team gel together? Play every week.
Yeah.
So the Dublin, how many league games do you have in the league in Dublin? There's how many teams in the senior 16. League?
12.
16. So, yeah, you have 15 games. And they'll have 90%... of their players in all those league games, having a few pints after the game, bang, you're a club all of a sudden.
Yeah.
What are Ballymun doing? Do you know what I mean? Think about it. Like, it's not rocket science as well. Like, you're down there trying to, it's almost like cheating for an exam or cogging for an exam. They're trying to get all this done when Jude's have all the work done. Yeah. They've been studying all year. Yeah. We're on top of everything. We're not doing any all-nighters, but
and that's shit for Ballymun, isn't it? Like, they're being punished for, like, service in the county.
That's it.
You know, where
that's
they should be rewarded a bit more. Yeah. But they're missing out for a championship. Yeah. Then.
No, that's a fact. That's the way it is. So anyways, Tony Brosnan, I had the pleasure of watching yesterday. Like we were saying before, we love a kind of fella who was discovered, who might have maybe lost his way for a year or two and then is back. Top class he was. He got 9 altogether. I think he got about 6 from play. Some beautiful scores. Most of them were off his left foot, but he seemed to make space for himself. Nice little jink, nice little bit of space. He gave one ball in the first half, put someone through for a point. It was Gooch-esque, so he comes out to the wing, gathers the ball, and then kind of over his shoulder kicks it into a space where a man's just running onto it. You know, those kind of passes. So, like, he had it all. He was interviewed after the game, a lot of yeras out of him. So, like, I mean, the Kerry boys are lovely. He wasn't giving much away. But a really, really good player. A really good player. Yeah. To think, like, I mean, he wasn't on the Crokes team, like, until Gooch was injured in the last round and he scored 114. Isn't this really weird? Do you not find this really weird that a fella who's not getting on his club team and only gets on it because Gooch gets on it, hits 114 and 9 points? Like, what's going on here, really? What's going on?
I don't know. I don't understand it. Like, surely he's good enough to play with Gooch on the forward line. Like,
well, that's the obvious conclusion I would come. Now, Kieran O'Leary's in there. He's obviously an ex Kerry captain. He's a full forward and he's a live wire as well. Really good club player. And they had another young lad, Shaw, in the other corner. Big rangy fella, real fast. And he was top notch as well. Never mind Looney, who is wing forward and top class, and Micheál Burns. That's a sensational forward line to have, really. And to have Dottie Casey and Johnny Buckley in the forwards, Gavin White, Kieran Fitzgerald in the defence. Like, I think these are going to be all our club champions.
Yeah, like, they'd be doing something wrong not to get to the final anyway, or semi-final. But Jesus, like, I was just watching the highlights as well. Like, there was one time where he looked like he didn't have all the space, and then getting that space in the first place is a real skill. Like, not a lot of people can do it, especially a senior championship. But one time he was being closed down, it looked like he was going on to his right, and he had that little good dummy as well, that like, quick bounce, and he's back on to his left with about 5 metres of space suddenly. But he did say afterwards that you can learn anything from Gooch. He's the best in the business. Like, so he has been sort of learning off him for all these years. Like, and Jesus, like, unleash him now. Like, they have to be in the same team. Like, this is a club championship winning team.
Oh yeah, leave them in there. Leave them in there on their own and play O'Leary a little bit in front of them. But look, they give lovely ball. Like, whenever they get the great thing, and they were dropping a lot of bodies back. You know, Crokes surprised me yesterday. Now, they've been running up. Tony Brosnan said they've been running up some big scores. So, like, maybe they, I don't know, would they have changed? But they're getting a lot of bodies back. Frustrating Legion. But when they broke with kick passes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They were getting it and they were moving that ball really fast through the foot, and even though they were getting bodies back, they still looked like a really attractive team to us. Do you know what I mean?
Almost.
Yeah, because Cara Finn got bodies back as well. It's just the way the kind of system to have and how they move the ball.
Yeah.
Just move the ball fast through the foot. Doesn't get any better than that.
Now that I mention Cara Finn though, I'm like, oh, actually, can they be beaten? I don't know.
Well, Cara Finn Crokes would be the big one, right? Crokes beat them in the Gaelic grounds 2 years ago when they beat Slocknail in the final.
Yeah.
They didn't play them last year because they were beaten by Nemo, but Cara Finn and Crokes in the final would be a real, you'd obviously argue for Slocknail, but that Cara Finn versus Crokes would be the real crowd pleaser. Vincent's would be in the mix there as well. Yeah, so there's some
club championship.
Is it what it's all about though? Honestly, like, I mean, Jesus Christ. So Ronan Maher, like I mentioned, so he gets 2 goals. So Ronan would be noted as centre back. He must have been moved in full forward because the Buff Egan has footage of his winning goal, which is just sensational. So this is in injury time, and they're down. They win 214 to 116. So it's 116 to 114. They're 2 points down in injury time. It was Kilruane McDonagh's, and not a club I'm massively familiar with either. And he got 2 goals in the last 10 minutes, and that was it. So game over. Hero of the day. Another great story.
The catch for the last goal. Like,
the catch,
3 men in front of him.
And he came out of nowhere.
Behind them all and just plucks it a little air and makes a bit of space for himself and drills it in. Second only, Tipperary Hurling Championship, my God, second only to John McGrath all during the week. Did you see that where he did his ground, so he moves him in the full forward and he's just hobbling around. He can hardly move. Buff, again, has the footage. And this guy's just walking along the full forward line, picking up ball and swinging it over, sometimes with one hand. And he scored 3 points in the last 10 minutes. They were 5 down and they rallied. This was a preliminary quarter final and then they won again at the weekend and now they're in the semi final as well.
As Buff would say, by God. Yeah. See, this is it again. And this isn't captured only for Buff Egan, in fairness, and he does some great work.
Classic.
But like, I mean, it's ridiculous that these brilliant performances are never really seen. I just don't get it. Although there will be highlights. It's on TG4 tonight at 8 o'clock. Usually yeah. Show highlights of as many games as they can, in fairness to them. TG Cahir, I better correct myself.
And they're like,
I'm back into this TG Cahir all the time now. I'm going to be lynched every show. Right, TJ Reid then. He scored 115. So Ballyhale Shamrocks beat Dixborough by 5 points. So he missed 3 first half penalties, which is absolutely incredible. And from seeing the highlights of this, we were sent in videos of the three penalty misses. They're on the website, and huge crowd at this one.
Yeah.
Now this is a big game because obviously Dixborough won it last year, and Ballyhale are the glamour team in Kilkenny, but he missed 3. So Colin Fennelly won all 3 penalties, which will surprise absolutely no one. So Shamrocks trailed by 3 at the break. Dixborough goalkeeper, so Dara Houlihan is his name. So he twice saved from TJ Reid. One was saved and went over the bar, and then TJ obviously got really pissed off that these were both saved, went for the corner and put it wide. This was for the third one. So the first two were saved, last one was wide. So TJ comes out in the second half and ends up like a man possessed and scores a goal early in the second half. They end up winning by 5 and he gets 115. 115 with 3 missed penalties. Like, I mean, holy crap. Yeah.
The most impressive
against the defending champions.
Yeah, like, and it's not only that he scored 115 after missing 3 penalties, is that he even hit the third one after missing 2 penalties. Like, you know, they have that balls, they come back up and say, nah, I'll hit it again.
Yeah.
I'm TJ Reid, and like, not being fazed by any one of the misses, I'd be ruined. I'd be remembering that for the rest of my life, missing 3 penalties in one game.
Yeah.
But that's just one half of hurling for him, and he scored 115.
The 115 kind of softens the blow, in fairness. It softens the blow. So Oisin Kelly, then, I mentioned at the start as well. So he scored a hat trick last week for his club in hurling, and they lost the county semi-final after him scoring a hat-trick. This week then, he scored 2 injury time goals for his football club, for Ban, to beat Clara. So they're back into the final for Ban. And I heard his interview after the game, so he didn't do much up until injury time, according to himself. But if he scored 2 goals in injury time to win a game, they were 2 points down, so 1 goal went a point up, and then his second goal went 4 up, so that was it. So you know, you're in the mix for performance the weekend if you're getting 2 injury time goals. I don't care. And you're more of a noted hurler. And there's a lot of dual fellas. There's a lot of county hurlers in Offaly that play with their clubs in football. Shane Dooley's the big example, which you just, it was weird to think of Shane Dooley on a football field.
This is another thing about club I'm actually thinking about now, is the dual. Like, you know, you look at Clare, the amount of people who are playing hurling the football, Tipperary hurling
the
football.
A lot of them. Conor McGrath and Podge Collins, when we know Podge is a footballer, but Conor McGrath is a good footballer as well, apparently.
Stock Neil won the hurling championship there at the weekend. Now they're playing their replay against Coleraine this week, in the middle of the week, the football.
All right.
It's all good. This is
But wasn't before we finish up, wasn't Chrissy McCaig not saying after the loss to the All Ireland semi final in hurling in football last year that a lot of them were going to have to make a decision because they couldn't sustain that week after week? And maybe it was just a knee jerk reaction by Chrissy to, you know, having lost, but it appears they're all lining out for both again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, you go back in January, or well, in their case, April, and I don't see how you just walk away from it after so much they've given. Like, I think it was probably, as you say, knee jerk, or just being hurt, having gotten so far a couple of times with both football and hurlers. I don't know. Like, I remember at the time he took a break from Derry as well and just said he was wrecked, like, probably emotionally more than anything.
Yeah.
Came back for Derry then anyway and played in the championship. And, you know, you just need a bit of break sometimes.
I think that was it. So, like, I mean, a lot of competition here for performance the weekend, but in his defence, he was the only one on television that I saw the full game of. So Tony Brosnan wins it. And I have a draw for Tony Brosnan this year, and he is the winner of performance the weekend. So he's going to get the Paddy Power lucky pants. And congratulations to him. So we will be back on Thursday, Conan, with another show. And we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because like I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.